think we are up to Pasuk Yud Bet. So the last discussion we had was the conversation between Ishbosheth and Avner, where Ishbosheth accuses Avner of taking his father's Pilegesh, Ritzpat Bataya, but for a different purpose, right? He married, took Mitzvah Bataya because Avner saw himself as a kind of a part of the royal process, part of the house of the Malchus, even if he wasn't the Malach. And at this point or another, Ishbosheth saw that as a little bit of of overstepping his ground, his boundaries. Perek Gimel, the conversation we discussed last week was Psukim Vav through Yud Aleph. Avner's response to Ishbosheth was, "You're in the wrong perek. I don't know where you are, but you're in the wrong perek. I can see from here you're in the wrong perek.
I want to
hear
that.
Yeah, they're a long way off. It actually is helpful because you just get to skip over the whole David Batsheva piece.
Cause right, yeah,
okay. Ishbosheth's Avner's response or reaction to Ishbosheth's accusation is quite harsh, and it's really sort of the last straw, where he says, "How dare you?" He said, "I put you on the throne. You're only on the throne because of me. I'm the power. I'm the general. I'm the army. You're nothing. You're a nobody." And the arrangement here of you being king and I being the power behind the throne suits you, suits me. You don't like it. I'll take my power and my position and my stature and the loyalty of the people. I'll take it elsewhere. And that's exactly what he says to him. Let's go back to Psukim, Pasuk Tet, or Pasuk Chet, Vayicha la'avner ma'od al divrei Ishbosheth, Vayomer harosh kelev anochi asher liyuda, היום עשה חסד עם בית שאול אביך עם אחיו אל מראהו ולא המציתיך ביד דוד ותפקוד עלי אבון האישה היום. So what am I, some kind of head of a dog? You could just dismiss me as you wish. I put you on the throne. I did a chesed in the house of Shaul. I took the one surviving son who really was not appropriate for Malchus, editorial comment, and I put you on the throne rather than handing you over to David. And this is how you repay me? It's time for me to now get in line with God's promise to David. So I'm going to take the Malchus from you. I'm going to hand it to David. And he'll reign not only over Yehuda, but over all of Israel, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. V'lo yachol od lahashiv et Avner davar miyirato oto. He could not respond to Avner out of fear. Who is the he?
Ishbosheth.
Right, Ishbosheth. And this is a phenomenon we've seen a few times in this parak, that Ishbosheth's name gets conspicuously dropped from the pronoun from the psukim, even though in the normal style of Tanakh, if you switch speakers, you would identify the speaker or the subject. In this case, it's almost as if Ishbosheth is kind of getting wiped out.
He's a nobody.
He's a nobody. He was always nobody. He had no.
Nobody doesn't deserve a name.
I mean, he's mentioned a few times, but not in critical places. Certainly not in the conversation with Avner. He's literally getting wiped off out of the story, or erased, and brings us to Psukim Yud Bet and on, where the focus shifts to Avner making good on his threat. He said to Ishbosheth he was going to take the Malchus away and hand it to David, and that's exactly what he does. וישלח אבנר מלאכים אל דוד תחתיו לאמור למי ארץ לאמור קרתה ביתך איתי והנה ידי עמך להסב אליך את כל ישראל. No, that's about enough. We're good. Okay. Pasuk Yud-Bet is a very difficult pasuk. Grammatically, very difficult pasuk. Avner sent messengers to David. Tachtav.
His subordinate.
Tachtav, again, the grammar of the word tachtav in this particular place is odd. In his place, in his stead, and under him, it's unclear what the phrase means. We'll see, that's one mystery in the pasuk. And the other grammatically problematic phrase is the phrase "lemi aretz." Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a subject.
Like, who is the land?
Yeah, or to whom is the land? Saying, "Karta b'tchaiti," make a covenant with me, and it is within my power. V'ine yadi imach, to bring to you, to turn to you in loyalty, all of Israel. So leaving the two problematic phrases for a moment, the message is clear. Avner sends a message to David, saying to him, I'm in a very unique position. You make a brit with me, I can hand you the entire country. In other words, he doesn't say to David, here I am, Nish, I swear loyalty to you, fealty to you. He doesn't walk into David's camp yet. He says to him, makes a deal with him, he sends messengers, and he says through the back channels, if you will, I have it within my power to bring all of the tribes of Israel to your door.
Oh, sorry.
I have it within my power.
Doesn't David know
make
who
a
he
print?
Is?
Yes. Of course he knows who he is. Right? And that's what he's exactly what he's saying to him. That's why he says yes. Mm-hmm. David wouldn't say yes if he didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. I have it within my power. Laseva lecha kol Yisrael. Kretayeti brit. Make a brit with me. Make an alliance with me. Let's make a peace treaty. Let's end the war now. And of course David will respond positively in a moment. But first, we need to understand the two mysterious phrases here. Meishlach avner malachim al David tachtav. What does tachtav mean? So the Mefashim are bothered by the grammar of it. It's just a word out of place.
Does it mean underneath?
Underneath, beneath, in lieu of, instead of, in place of, it can mean lots of things. So if you look at the Mefashim, and I gave you a page with a bunch of them, the word tachtav. So Targum Yonatan translates it as Ushalach Avner Izgadin Lat David Me'atre. He sent messengers from his place. I mean, he sent from wherever he was, he sent messengers to David. Yeah, simple explanation. Metzura David. Similarly, Ritzono Lamar, Rishalach Malachim Mimkomo. He sent messengers from his place. Okay? And that would make the word less significant of, or mean, we'll just, Avner sent messengers. Mitzvah Tzion, on the other hand, picks up on the fact that instead of the use of the word Malachim, which means messengers, Vayishlach Avner Malachim al David Tachtav, meaning Bimkomo. Avner was trying to communicate with David, but instead of going to David, he sent an emissary. He sent messengers in his stead, in his place, in lieu of, in place of, or representing Avner. Vayishlach Malachim Tachtav. Instead of him going, he sent messengers to go in his place.
Representatives.
Again, if you're negotiating an alliance, then you know that can be a smart move because you never know how the other side is going to react.
But they can say it as an insult too.
On the other hand, it can be somewhat of a dangerous move because David could see it as you want to come talk to me, come talk to me yourself, right? You're the general. What are you sending a scout for. So there's a little bit of a danger in that moment or that decision. To his credit, or to I guess to his mazel, David accepts the emissary, but nonetheless, that is there's that danger. The Malva, on the other hand, throws in an interesting twist, suggests that the word tachtav is more than just a syntactical message, right? He sent messengers in his place, but rather a description of actually the role, the power, the authority that these messengers had. If Vayishlach Avner Malachim Tachtav, if he sent messengers in his stead, that means that those messengers are authorized, are empowered with the authority of Avner. And so if you look at the Malbim, he says, Malachim Tachtav, Ratzono Lomar, Shayu HaMalachim Murshim Me'ito, Shehem Yamdu Tachtav Ubim Komo V'tiye Yadam Ki Yado. They are full ambassadors with full authority to act in as the representative of Avner, which in itself, remember, they imagine for a moment they're not just lowly scouts, but they're people, let's say his first lieutenant or his first sort of right-hand man. He sends somebody who David would understand, could act and could speak on behalf of Avner with authority. Vayishlach Avner Malachim al David Tachtav. These are people not just instead of him going, not just a lazy option he wants to sleep in that morning, right? This is a significant moment. He wants to send people who David would understand are authorized and empowered to speak on behalf of Avner. So that's all one school of thought. Targum Yonatan, Mitzvah David, Mitzvah Tzion, Malvin, they all pick up on the Malachim Tachtav, the messengers who went in lieu of Avner himself going. The messengers went in his place with his authority, with his empowered, but all from the vantage point of connecting the word Tachtav to Malachim. Yishlach Malachim Tachtav. He sent Malachim, he sent messengers in his stead, but empowered with his position and authority. The one perish I found that took a very different tack and interpretation to the word tachtav, svedak, and I just, whether it's pshat or not, I don't know, but it's just an interesting twist. Svedak picked up on a different aspect. Tachtav lemor, says the Svedak, beseter. Shalachlo. He sent these messengers in secret. Right. Tachtav.
Like the underground.
Right. Well, in a sense. Lemita avata aretz elalacha, kamoshamar hakel, karta bitchaimi, vani yesov lacha ko Yisrael. In other words, he sent him these messages. The rest of these is phrases from the continuation of the psukim. But the fact that he sent him beseter means what? Who is he? Beseter.
Why did it have to be in secret?
Why did it have to be in secret?
I guess he didn't want to know that there was an alliance, that they were working together. Because publicly he'd been working with Ishbosheth or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean militarily.
Why else would Avner want to keep it a secret from whom?
His Puleg Shem or something? He wanted to have both ways.
Who is he keeping a secret from that he sent this alliance to David?
The sons of David?
He's a very simple candidate. Say it again. Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth. He wants Ishbosheth to... He threatened him.
Yeah.
He threatened him 2 psukim ago, of which David Avner had no answer. Then, Vayishlach Malachim al David Tachtav. He sent messengers to David in his stead. In whose stead? In Avner's stead, right? He sent messengers instead of himself. Says the Vadak, no, read it differently. It's not that he sent messengers in his stead instead of himself going. It's rather, he sent messengers to David in lieu of or instead of communicating with Ishbosheth. The Tachtav is in place of Ishbosheth. Ishlach Malachim al David Tachtav. Instead of talking to Ishbosheth, now Avner is talking to David. And this is the beginning of the shift of the alliance. Vayishlach Avner Malachim el David Tachtav. It's not the Malachim Tachtav, the Malachim instead of Avner. It's Malachim el David Tachat Ishbosheth. Instead of talking to Ishbosheth, now he's communicating with David. And this is the beginning of a very under, sort of a very secret conversation or alliance, as most negotiations are, at least at the beginning, that he doesn't want Ishbosheth to find out. Now, Ishbosheth clearly doesn't yet know what's going on, because we'll see as the story continues, Ishbosheth plays a role that in Ishbosheth's mind is an innocent one, without realizing the extent to which he's going to play into Avner's hands and David's hands. But the context here of the message to David, I turn to you, Lemia Aretz, we'll see what that phrase means in a moment, right, and say to you, God has promised you the land, I can give it to you. You make an alliance with me, and you'll be much better off. Now, he already has a general. Right? David already has a general, so I'm not quite sure what the alliance here is. You want to put me in charge of your army? What does that do with Yoav? What's the implication of the request here? Kartai mi brit. What's the implication? Kartai britcha iti. Make your brit with me. Me instead of? Ishbosheth, or me instead of Yoav? To whom is he? He's the general, so exactly to whom is he alluding here? Unclear. But that is the message ultimately. Imach lasev alecha et kol Yisrael. I can bring you the tribes of Israel. And he can. He certainly can deliver. What is Lemi Aretz? Lemi Aretz is a short phrase. To whom does the earth, to whom is the land? Rashi has two interpretations, both more or less along similar lines. Lashon Shavua, he says. It's a term that reflects a kind of an oath. Lemisha aret shelo. I take an oath to whom the earth belongs, to whom the land belongs. Namely?
David.
No.
Oh.
An oath to whom the land belongs. To God. Right? Ashen shvua. Lemisha aret shelo. The only problem with that interpretation is that the word aret in Tanakh typically doesn't refer to the world as a whole. The word Hevel typically refers to the Lashem. Well, that's not consistent either. Lashem Aratzum La'at Tevel V'yoshveva. You can work it either way. Nonetheless, Rashi offers a second interpretation. Lemi Aretz, Lemi Sheha Malchut Hagun Lo, Ani Sholeach Lo, Lemor Karta Britcha Iti. Lemi Aretz, to whom this land belongs. Which would fit more in the context of the word Aretz, not referring to the world, but rather this land. To whom does this land belong? To whom should this land belong?
To Israel.
To David,
tribes.
Right? Who's the leader here? Right?
Yeah,
David. Lemi Aretz, to whom does all of this belong, potentially? To you, therefore, Kartai Tibrit, and I can make it happen. So it's either a Lashon Shavua to Kodesh Baruch Hu, or an expression of endearment or kavod to David. Lemi Aretz, to whom does all of this, to who should be the leader of all of this land, if not you? There's a third possibility, and because I'll pick up on the fact that there's a certain arrogance in this phrase, Lemi Aretz, and that he gets, Avner gets punished for it in the end. But the other possibility is, what's he saying in the end, second half of this verse? Who has the ability to gather all of the people and hand you the leadership of the people? Who's the kingmaker here?
General.
Right? Avner.
Avner.
Avner, he says to of himself, imach I can make this happen. I have the ability and the power to bring to you all the tribes of Israel. That power rests with me. Lemia aretz, who is the power in the land? Me. Bnei adi imach. I will give you my loyalty and all of that power if you so just wish it. Avner knows that he can't be king. But he also knows that he has the ability to be the kingmaker, and by that, to be the most important person in the land. He tried it with Ishbosheth, didn't work very well. So he turns to David, and he says, I'll make you the same deal. You allow me the power and the authority of the Malchus, and I will bring you the loyalty of the people, all the tribes of Israel. Lemiaretz. So you sort of get a sense of where Avner is coming from. Now the question really becomes, what is David's response? And surprisingly, David's response is unexpected. Vayomer vayomer. Tov. Ani echot itcha brit. David's response, so let it be, let it be so. No problem. I will make my brit with you. But one prerequisite condition. And that is, Lo tiret panai ki im lifnei havi'acha et Michal bat Shaul bevo'acha li'ot et panai. If you want to show up in my kingdom, you bring me back Michal bat Shaul. That's my terms. You want to come? You bring me Michal Bat Shaul. Story's not over. Pasuk Yudalet. Vayishlach David Malachim El Ishboshet Ben Shaul Lemor. David then sent messengers to Ishboshet Ben Shaul with the request. Tna et ishti et michal asher erasti li b'me'ar lot plishtim. I would like my wife back, please. Michal, my wife, who I went and attacked 100 plishtim in order to merit marrying her, and then your father had the chutzpah to hand her over to Palti ben Laish. I want her back. We're gonna talk about what this purpose of this move is. We're gonna talk about what the purpose of this move is. There's a lot going on here.
Ishbosheth came in and he's really been out of it. I mean, when you think about it.
Wow. Suddenly, it's the first conversation between David and Ishbosheth on this whole story.
Right.
Ishbosheth veikachem me'im ish me'im paltiel ben laish. So Ishbosheth goes, sends a message, and he says, Michal, Mrs. Palti ben Laish. You are wanted elsewhere. Vayelech ita isha, her husband went with her, walked with her. Who's her husband? Palti ben Laish. Haloch uvacho acharea ad bachurim, walking behind her, walking with her, crying until they reached this place of Bachurim. Vayomer elav Avner lech shuv vayashuv. To which Avner was there, met them, and said to Palti ben Laish, okay, Mr. Palti ben Laish, you're done. Go home. And he left. And the rest of the story is a continuation of Avner's negotiation with David. Udvar Avner ayat imziknei Israel, as Avner then begins to move towards coming to Hebron, where David is, he turns to the elders of Israel and he says to them, listen, I know that you've always really wanted David as your king. We know this. David's the popular one. David's been the one all along. You guys are hearing the kingdom of Ishbosheth and you're dreaming and hoping for one day being in the kingdom of David. Ata asu כי השם אמר על דוד לאמור ביד דוד עבדי הושיע את עמי ישראל מיד פלישתים ומיד כל אויביהם. Now, you act. It's time to act. It's time to do exactly what you've always wanted to do, which was to proclaim your loyalty to David, in understanding that ultimately God has appointed David as the one who will save Israel from the hands of the Plishtim, from the hands of all our enemies. Vaydeber gam Avner b'oznei Binyamin, similar lesson, similar message Avner delivered to the elders of Shevet Binyamin, in particularly important Shevet, because not only does it border with Shevet Yehudah, but it's also the tribe of Shaul. You win Binyamin, the battle's over. And then finally, after he had the loyalty of all the people, finally shows up in Hebron to speak to David. Et kol asher tov b'einei Yisrael u'v'einei kol beit Binyamin. A matter which was well seated in the eyes of all of Israel and the eyes of Binyamin. Vayavo Avner el David Hebron. He comes to David in Hebron, he brings an entourage of 20 people. They break bread, they make a feast, they have a party. Avner turns to David and he makes a promise. Akuma ve'elecha ve'kbetzal Adoni ha-melech et kol Yisrael. Let me now go do my job, I promised you. I would bring you all the tribes of Israel, and so I shall do. They made a brit together. They will make with you a brit. These tribes that I will bring to you, they will make a brit with you. You shall reign over all your heart's desire. David sends Avner on his way, and they go peacefully. I want to come back to the story of Michal, but before I do, I have a simple question. Where is Yoav in the story? I can't imagine that Yoav would be just kind of like sitting on the sidelines biting his tongue.
He's not right? Here.
So the answer is he's not there. Because if you look at the next pasuk, V'nei avdei David v'yoav b'me'agdud. Yoav was away that day. He was out on duty. He was fighting some battle. David met with Avner, made a brit with Avner, made an agreement to gather all the forces, all the tribes of Israel. Yoav is nowhere to be seen anywhere near that story. The consequences of that we shall look at another time. I want to go back to Palti ben Laish and to Michal. Why now? Of all times, like he's been sitting, he's married. We already established how many wives does he have, right? Now suddenly he remembers Michal. Now suddenly he wants Michal back, and he doesn't just turn to Avner to ask. You know, he doesn't just say to Avner, "You know what? In secret, Avner, you want my loyalty? I want you to bring me Michal." He turns to Ishbosheth and asks for Michal. And Ishbosheth just goes along with it. Something's going on. So what's the dynamic? What's the message? What's the purpose of this conversation about Michal and Palti ben Laish? I think we dealt a little bit with the issue of what the Mefarshim deal with, which is the sort of the legality of the whole creation. I think we dealt with that back in Perek of Hay, correct? When we first encountered the story that Shaul had given Palti and Michal over,
I think the women here were too happy about it.
It's, as I said, I have to. Okay, we're going to leave that for now. But I've said many times, you have to be careful not to judge biblical events on the basis of modern sensibilities and morality. It's a different world.
Let's just put romance is sort of out the window in this book.
Because there is no romance in all of Tanakh. It doesn't exist in the dynamic of we live in a very Hollywood world where we expect everything to be dealt with, to be driven by romance. In the world of Tanakh, it doesn't work that way. There's virtually no...
It's all political.
It's just different. Marriage is a different purpose. Marriage is a very different context.
You have Malchus also.
And it's Malchus. And it's, marriage in general has a very different role. It's a whole different world. We, you know, the utopian Hollywood world in which we live in today doesn't exist in the context of Tanakh. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a dynamic issue with David and Michal, and we'll talk about that.
She loves him.
Once before. And that we actually addressed, the fact that she's the only person in all of Tanakh who's described as with the verb of love is used from the woman to the man. She's the only one in all of Tanakh from the very outset. It's unclear that it was a mutual attraction or a mutual relationship. That's a little bit of a tough yeah. piece on the story of David. But that's less the issue for now. The legality of having given her to Palti Ben Laish, so the first was struggle with the question of what happened to the marriage, what happened to the legal status, is it adultery, is it not adultery. The truth is, the simplest explanation for it is either, like in so many instances, the process of marriage and divorce in those days was different than it is today. The legalities around marriage and divorce operated differently than they did, than they do in a world of chazal, in the world of a sort of a structured operation. It was much less structured, much less rigid than it was in today's world. And so from that perspective, once David left, it's the equivalent of essentially giving her a get. In modern terms, we'd say, gave her a get before he left. Because he was leaving, and he was running for his life. He wasn't expecting to come back. So whatever the equivalent of in the biblical context for giving a get was, that's more or less what would have happened to have happened. That's one possibility. The other possibility is there's an element of her feeling of element of shogeg in the whole issue, because it's unclear that this whole discussion of a question whether or not the marriage was consummated, whether it was legal, it's all
we can get into.
Oh, that's I think the much bigger piece. The much bigger piece in the story isn't the question of the legality of the matter, etc. It's the fact that there's a tragedy here that unfortunately is, I'd call it a casualty of war. Okay, the casualty of war, or the casualty of Malchus, when you're playing with Malchus, the average person is going to get burnt a little bit. And that average person, in this case, is Palti Ben Laish, who's related to the house of Shaul, but he's not royalty in any way. And his emotional context here is identified, but also it's a tragedy. But it's not enough to stop the fact that this is the king and she is his wife, or was his wife, and he wants her back. And so be it. And that's what's going to happen.
It's kind of interesting because since I'm learning on Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
that maybe it's a little foreshadowing for Bathsheba and Uriah. Not like, I mean, it's different, but I mean, like, it's like they, when we learned it, it was like Abigail was also considered sort of legally maybe he could have had an argument for this, but there was something off about this.
Maybe. I think David's motivation here is a lot more, we give him less credit than we should. We'll come to it in a second. I think there's an element of acknowledgement that the injured party in this story, which is to an extent unavoidable, is Palti Ben Laish. But in the end, whose fault is that?
Shaul.
Right. And we have to remember that. Right? This is not David's fault. Right. This is Shaul's fault. Because it was Shaul who took Michal, and who never wanted David, and who threatened David, and who saw David as a threat, and who ended up expelling David from the household, and chasing him, turning him into a near-dove, and then giving Michal away, that ultimately created the circumstances of the human tragedy, of which I think there is, and I think the text emphasizes his tears, but in the end, Avner says to him, I'm sorry, go home, there's nothing you can do. Hello, shav, be'ashav. That's it. Maybe.
Do you think he needed to have Michal back as part of...
Oh, and I'll kind of come back to why he wanted Michal back in a second. But just to finish the piece, the irony to the tragedy of Palti Ben Laish, if you want to look at foreshadowing, is a little bit of Bathsheba, but much more so to the story of Shimi ben Gera. Shimon ben Gera, in the aftermath of the rebellion of Avshalom, there's a series of tragedies that happen that are all interconnected. It starts with David and Bathsheba, then it goes to Amnon and Tamar, and then it goes to the rebellion of Avshalom, and ultimately the closest David actually gets to being defeated, which is when he's exiled from Yerushalayim and Avshalom takes over the palace. And at that moment, as he's leaving, there's this man there, I guess in the house of Shaul, who feels that it's time to kind of open up the floodgates, and who stands there and who publicly curses David, and he throws rocks at him, throws stones at him. And David lets him. And everybody else wants to kill him, and David says, this is, in a sense, this degrading moment is kind of a punishment for everything that I've been through. That story of Shimon ben Gera takes place at a place called Bachurim.
Is it the same place?
Yeah.
Where is that place, by the way?
I'm not sure 100%. Somewhere in Shevet Binyamin.
But so if is you it look near Shiloh or something like that?
No, she lives in Ephraim. She lives much further north. But if you look at Shmuel Bet Perek Tet Zayin, starting with Pasuk Hey, I believe. This is as he's leaving Yerushalayim. Uva Melech David ad Bachurim. David comes to that place called Bachurim. V'ine misham ish yotzei mimishpachat Beit Shaul. A man came out relative to in the house of Shaul. Ushmo Shimi ben Gera. Yotzei yatzo mekalel. Coming, walking, cursing publicly. Vayisakel ba'avanim et David ve'et kol avdei ha'melech David. Throwing stones, hurling stones at David. V'chol ha'am v'chol ha'giburim mimino v'mismolo. David is surrounded by his generals and his armies and his warriors. V'chol ha'mar shimim b'kalalot. Tzei tzei ish ha'damim b'ish ha'blial. Get out, you man of blood, you worthless person. Yishiv alech Hashem kol demei Beit Shaul asher malachta tachtav. God has repaid you now for all of the blood of the house of Shaul, whose house you stole and usurped with rain in his stead. Vayiten Hashem et ha'melucha b'yad Avshalom b'necha v'nei b'ra'atecha ki ish damim ata. Alright. So there is a certain iron, even the phrase halach uvach vayikalel. Halach ve'ikalel, kind of reminiscent of halach uvacho, that Shimon ben Gera is walking and cursing as Palti ben Laish is walking and crying, and kind of this irony. Although it's more connected to the Bathsheba piece, adultery is punishable by stoning, but there might be an element in there too. It's a complicated story, but it just, I think it emphasizes the tragedy side of the Palti ben Laish part of the story. Nonetheless, the emphasis here is clearly on David's request for Michal. And so the question becomes, A, why does he request Michal now, of all times? Why does he make that the prerequisite from Avner, to accept Avner's position, or proposal? And why does he double the request by turning it to Ishbosheth of all people? There's a fourth question. And this I put on the source page because I wanted you to see the language. I put the two requests side by side. To Avner, he makes the following statement. Vayomer tov ani achrot itcha brit ach davar achad anuchi shu'al meitcha lemor. Lo tiret panai ki im lifnei hevi'acha et Michal bat Shaul bevocha likrot et panai. You will not come to me without first bringing me Michal bat Shaul. David to Ishboshet, vayishlach David malachim al Ishboshet ben Shaul lemor, tnat ishti et Michal asher erasti li b'mea orlot plishtim. Give me my wife Michal, whom I betrothed through the efforts of killing 100 plishtim. So there's a different tenor, a different tone in the two requests. To Ishboshet, the request is?
More like a demand.
To Ishboshet or to Avner?
To Ishboshet. That he earned, that he earned the marriage to.
That's not a demand. That's a.
What?
That's a right a wrong. Right. This is an opportunity to right a wrong. I was wrong. Why was I wronged? Because my wife, who I worked for, who I my effort, I killed 100 plishtim, I went to battle for, etc., was given to somebody else. You have an opportunity now to right this wrong. Tna et ishti et michala she'erasti li b'me'olot plishtim. That's not a demand. Demand is when you say to somebody, you don't step foot in my castle unless you do A, B, and C.
Well, that's what...
That's a demand.
That's what's Avner said.
And that's what he said, he said to Avner. That's what I thought you meant. Right? That's what he says to Avner. To Avner, he says, you want to show up in my palace? Because indeed, you're not showing up without...
Micha
bat shol. Lo tiuchalu otet panai. It's kind of like what Yosef said to the brothers. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not going to give you the time of day without Michal Bat Shaul first. So it's a very different tone to the request to from Avner to the request to Ishboshet. That's one difference. There's another difference.
One's direct and one's indirect.
One is direct and one is indirect. That's true. And he's speaking to Avner. He sends messages to Ishboshet. I assume that's because Avner started the conversation. So Ishboshet, he's had no conversation with Ishboshet whatsoever. This is the first initiative out to Ishboshet. But there's another very significant description of Michal.
She's Bat Shaul.
Right. To Avner, he calls Michal.
Michal Bat Shaul.
Michal Bat to Avner.
No, it says Michal Bat Shaul.
Correct. And to Ishboshet, he refers to Michal as
Ishti
et Michal, and there's no reference to Bat Shaul at all. Mm-hmm. They are described very differently. These are two different conversations. They are very targeted and they are very specific. To each one, there is a different message. And so, to break it down, what we really need to understand is what's the message that he's trying to frame. From David's perspective, what's he trying to accomplish?
Well, so with Avner, he's basically taking over from Shaul.
Okay.
The final thing is getting his wife back.
So you see that as what?
That he's basically, and it's interesting because the whole thing with the fight with Ishboshet and him was about women, and Avner too.
Yeah, I don't think he knows that though. Remember, David doesn't...
No, I'm just saying David's for the reader, it's
yeah,
sort of ironic.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that he's just saying to Avner, in order for this to really be solidified, you have to bring me Shaul's daughter, who was mine.
Why? So that you can show me how much power
control,
you have?
The ultimate control, no?
I don't think it's about control. Maybe. I think I would give David more... I don't think it's about control.
I mean, I think it will establish his malchut.
Right.
I mean, he needs her because it establishes that he was married to the king's daughter.
There are two ways David is going to ascend the throne. Remember what Avner's message is. Avner's message is, I will give you all the people. You will be king over all of Israel. We are going to essentially shift the base of power from Ishboshet over the tribes of Binyamin and Israel and you over Yehudah to you being king in lieu of Malchut Shaul. You essentially were going to eliminate Malchut Shaul and you are going to take over. The potential for that to be an endless bloodshed, endless civil war, is enormous. David never wanted the kingdom split. David never wanted Ishboshet to... said, or never wanted to challenge Ishboshet for the throne. It was David's intention all along, and that goes back to the story of Yavesh Gilad, that this should end peacefully. And here, after 5 years of war and after 5 years of Avner, essentially, instead of them coming to David and recognizing David as king, Avner is the one who led all the tribes of Israel, despite the fact that the people wanted to be loyal to David. And despite the fact that Avner knew that God had promised the reign to David. Right? We now have evidence to both of those statements. Avner was the one who took all the people and declared his loyalty to Ishbosheth because Ishbosheth was royalty. Royal blood. And who's David? He's a nobody. He's a whippersnapper. He's a kid. He's an outsider. Avner says, I will hand you all the people. How? By what basis is Avner going to hand the people to David?
War.
Right. Avner's a general. He's going to turn to them and he say, we're now, our loyalty has been to Avner, to Ishbosheth. I no longer like Ishbosheth. I'm changing sides. You come with me. And if you don't like it, so be it. I'm the general. You do what I say. That's not the kind of malchus David wants to build. In no circumstances does he want a kingdom built on blood.
But that could cause a civil war, really.
Correct. So his only option, which is the most respectful, is to Shaul, is to say to Avner, I will agree to your terms, but not on your terms, on my terms. Restore my position to the marriage to Michal Bat Shaul. And what happens to David? He returns to his position as the son-in-law of Shaul. Mm-hmm. So Ishbosheth, and we'll deal with Ishbosheth in a second, but the moment he returns to that position as Chatan HaMelech, he has a legitimate claim to the throne. He does not want to build the Malchus of Malchut Beit David in lieu of or on the ashes of Malchut Beit Shaul. That, in the end, is what's going to happen, but not because that's what he wants to happen. What he wants to happen is Michal Bat Shaul is his ticket to building a Malchus that is a continuation of the house of Shaul. This is very much part of David's continued respect for the position of Shaul and his desire not to destroy the legacy of Shaul, but to build on it. So he always saw himself. That's why he never saw Shaul as the enemy, never attacked Shaul, never engaged with Shaul. Even after it's all said and done, even after the 5 years of civil war, to David, restore Michal, and we can rebuild this as the continued legacy of the house of David. Like Shaul. Of Shaul. Like Yonatan said to him, you will be king and I will be your Mishneh. Well, Yonatan's no longer in the picture. But that promise of the son-in-law taking over the heir to the position of the throne as the continuation of the house of Shaul is still ringing in David's ear. And so he says to Ishbosheth, I'll let you come, but not in war. Bring me Michal Bat Shaul, and I can ascend the throne as the son-in-law of Shaul, and continue the legacy of Shaul. That's what David wants. It's a very different picture. Take a look at the Radak, at the Malbim, on the bottom of the page, and that's exactly how the Malbim explains this story. Ba'asher chashav David machshavot merosh ve'ad sof. From beginning to end, David never wanted to be perceived as the servant who rebelled against his master, destroys his master's house and takes over the kingdom in violence. That's not David. He was commanded to do so by the Navi, the Apidin, ubahaskamat Yisrael v'ziknehem, legally, and with the agreement of all of Israel and the elders. Therefore, ratzash yeshiv lo at Michal, he wanted them to return Michal, shemitzad zeu chatan ha-melech asher lefanav, because that makes him the son-in-law of the king. V'yesh lo zchut b'mlucha gam mitzad Shaul. And therefore he has a rightful claim to the throne, not just a violent claim to the throne. Very different picture. Very unexpected. I don't think Avner expected that response. But that's David. David's always thinking three steps ahead. And so his response to Avner is very calculated. I'm not letting you in my Dalai Lamas. It's not just, okay, Avner, but please bring me back Shaul. Michal. He says to me in a very, very regal, legal statement, you're not stepping foot in Hebron with an army in tow. You want to come here? You come here bringing the king's daughter, my wife, and reestablish my claim to Shaul's throne. We can talk. That's to Avner. And then, remarkably, in the same breath, without so much as a pause except for a paragraph, David does something extraordinary, which is he sends a delegation to Ishbosheth. Now, he said no communication with Ishbosheth whatsoever, and he has no knowledge of the details of the rift between Ishbosheth and Avner. I think he can suspect. Right? If Avner is now offering to change sides, something's going on, right?
And it could be perceived by Avner as a, slight that he went to Ishbosheth.
I've no doubt. On the other hand, what's operating in David's mind is far more important than whether he slights Avner.
He's not going to be to Avner what Ishbosheth was to Avner. He's not going to be some patsy to listen to.
No, on the contrary.
But I'm saying,
on the contrary,
maybe
what's he offering Avner? What's he offering to Ishbosheth? Right. If he turns to Ishbosheth, and this is what Doc says. Very interesting. Al pishish af al pish shalach Avner shalach gam li Ishbosheth lichvado shelo vatsa lekachta belo reshuto. He sends a message to Ishbosheth out of kavod to Ishbosheth. It's an extraordinary moment for David. Out of kavod to Ishbosheth. He knows Avner is a general. Avner may think himself the power of the throne. But David has far more respect for the throne than Avner does. And he is not going behind Avner, Ishbosheth's back. And he turns to Ishbosheth and he says, please return to me let's right an injustice in the course of history. Return to me my wife, Michal, was taken from me. Now, it's not about Michal Bat Shaul. Ishbosheth is Michal's brother. He doesn't have to say to Ishbosheth, bring me Michal Bat Shaul. It's not about her being royalty. It's about her being his sister, who was taken away from David and given to Palti ben Laish, and David turns to Ishbosheth and he says, brother-in-law to brother-in-law,
I want my wife.
Can you please right this injustice? Now, can Ishbosheth put the pieces of the puzzle together? I suspect so. But what does that give Ishbosheth?
Covered.
And in the end, if in fact Avner's offer is correct, and this is a position of this is a game changer, and it's going to restore David to a position of a claim to the throne. Where's that going to put Ishbosheth? Out on the street? In jail as a traitor?
He'll still be
right.
Part
if it was up to Avner,
still be part
right.
of the royal family.
Right.
No?
If it was up to Avner, where would it put Ishbosheth?
Nowhere.
Right, he'd be killed.
because he's now loyal to David.
And because Avner's anger is directed at Ishbosheth more than anything else. If it was up to Avner, Ishbosheth wouldn't survive the day.
But David's not going to do it.
But that's not David. So what does David do?
He
invites him into his palace. He invites Ishbosheth to bring Michal to him as brother and sister. And suddenly, Michal marries David. David becomes king. Michal becomes the queen. And Ishbosheth becomes right. With all of the covenant and all of the position and stature that creates. If Ishbosheth's got an ounce of insight, wisdom, you take him up on his offer and do an end run around Avner.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Ishbosheth doesn't get the time to think that through because he gets assassinated by the end of the parak, but doesn't happen. But
right. What a happy story!
But that's the dynamic. In other words, we tend to look at the story from the perspective of the kind of the human tragedy, which is correct. But the messaging of the perek is about David. And the depth of David's calculations, motivated continuously out of a profound respect for the position of the king. So ultimately, that I think is what's driving the request now. You want to come to me, you come to me with Michal, reestablishes my legitimate claim to the throne and not out of bloodshed. I'll make the same request from Ishbosheth, whether or not he tells of Nedar, I don't think so. Make the same request of Ishbosheth, although in Ishbosheth's case, it's out of the brother and sister connection. Give Ishbosheth a position of stature and covered in his own kingdom. And transform this 5-year civil war in David's mind into Bishalom. They will come to him, he'll establish his kingdom, he'll be the son-in-law of Shaul, it'll be house of Shaul, David the son-in-law on the throne, Ishbosheth the son on the next to him, and Michal bat Shaul is his queen, and they all live happily ever after. That's David's dream. No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't happen that way. But at least he can hope, he can dream. Right? He can interpret.
His intentions are good.
His intentions were good. I think in this particular case, I think David's intentions were good. Now, I can't necessarily say that in every instance, but in this particular instance, I think that is undoubtedly the case. All right. That brings us to the conclusion of the story of Michal and Palti ben Laish. Where we go from here is the rest of the perek, which is the Yoav Avner conflict. So that's a long piece. It'll take us to the end of the perek. I think we're going to stop a few minutes early rather than starting a whole new piece. So we will adjourn at this point.